Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Amar Aleph, 14 lines down. Toi Rabbi Abahu, Shibolet, Shemircha, Bikri, Bishatla. Similar to the previous case we had before, where you got to a point of Gemar Malacha, but you didn't turn it into a kernel. It's still in the sheath. It still has the chaff on it. It's something that he replants, even though they've already harvested. Bikara Aleha Shem B'Mechubar. And then he calls it Truma Maser, but it's already in the ground when it's been replanted. Mahu. What is the din here? Kevin de Mircha, Tavlala. So since he went through the Gemar Malocha, he processed it to the point where it is Chayav in Trumot and Maserot. Therefore, it has a Shem Tevel. Kikari Ale Shem Kachala. And therefore, it's Hevel can turn into Truma and Maser. When you're Mafrish, the Trumot and Maserot from Tevel, that's how Truma and Maser get taken off. That's how they can become Kadosh. And this is a part of that Tevel, and therefore it's over here. You can create a Truma or a Maser with this item. Odilma came into Shatla, because he already replanted it, Pakale Tavlamina. The Tevel goes away from it. The Shem Tevel goes away from it. The question as to the practicality of this, we dealt with in the previous situation, as to how do you have something in its stalk that went through a Gemar Malocha. Rashi says that even though it wasn't going through the process of Miruach, but because you took off Masrot from it and it eventually will end up in the process of Miruach, that's enough. We saw the Rabbeinu Gershom who said that you did Miruach along with the other grains and you left this one in its stalk and it went with the other stuff and you did Miruach with it. So there was a Gemar Malacha associated with it. And you then went ahead and replanted whatever it was that you took out. Does the replanting then change the status of the item? Clearly was Tevel. Now you put it into the ground and maybe it's Ois Tevel. With regards to Tuma and Tahara, there it's a little simpler because we have a principle that when it comes to Mechuber the Karka, comes to something called Zri'ah. If you plant something, that's true in the water, in the Mei Mikveh, we have a concept of Zri'ah. We also have a concept of Zri'ah on the ground. That eliminates the din of Tuma. Something that's Mechuber the Karka cannot be Mikabel Tuma. Something that was Tamei, when you replant and you zoreya it, you can understand maybe why it would be Tahor afterwards, or it would lose its Tumah. On the other hand, what's the reason that the Tevel over here should disappear when you plant it into the ground? Suggest over here that it's actually not that the Tevel goes away, but rather that the Tevel is suspended. Because while it's in the ground, it can't be Tevel. Something that's Mechuber the Karka is not Tevel. Now this was Tevel already, and now that you planted it, so the question really revolves around not whether it is or isn't Tevel. It is Tevel. But while it's in the ground, it's Shem Tevel in a sense is suspended. And then you can't turn it into Truma and Maser while it's in the ground. Or do we say that the Shem Tevel stays with it? And even though it's Mechuber the Karka, even though it's back in the ground, you can still take off Trumot de Masrot from this item. So Amrle Rabbonin le Abaye. The Rabbonin suggests to Abaye, Imkein Matzinu Truma b'Mechuber le Karka. In that way, we then find that Truma can exist when it's Mechuber the Karka. Vitnan. We have a Mishnah, Lo Matzinu Truma b'Mechuber the Karka. One of the properties of Truma is we don't find it b'Mechuber the Karka. If you look here, I saw the Shas on the side of the notes, he says, the Kotzei Dati, Lo Yadati Litzain Mekomo b'Mishnah. I don't know any Mishnah in Shas that has this line in it. O b'Braita. Or in any Braita that we have in Shas. So even though it says Tnan, he says, all right, forget about Mishnayot. I don't find it in the Mishnah, but I don't even find it in a Braita Shehem Mifurash Tavarzeh. So he says that we don't find this anywhere, and many point out that this really isn't something that's found, although we do have other precedents for this in the Gemara, where sometimes it'll quote something as if it's a Mishnah or a Braita, even though it's not a Mishnah or a Braita, either because it derives from a diuk from a Mishnah or a Braita, or because it comes from a Midrash Halacha, which we don't have, some point to a Sifrei that has something along these lines, and they say maybe that's the source. But again, it uses the word Tnan, which makes it somewhat difficult. But given the fact that there is this principle that we don't find Shumah b'Mechubar l'Karka, if you are right about your ability to plant this Tevel and then make it into Shumah, you would have Truma b'Mechuber the Karka. Samalei, Kitani Ahi, Linyan Ichiyuve, Mita v'Chomesh. That's with regards to the status of the item for someone who eats Truma v'meizid who's chayav mita bidei shamayim, and the chomesh, someone who eats truma bishogeg, when they repay it to the kohen, they have to pay an extra chomesh along with it. Di'italish va'achil talushu. If it is pulled out and separated and he eats it, that's considered to be out, and therefore you'll be chayav mita or chomesh. Bigachin va'achil. The other hand, if he bends over and eats it while it's attached to the ground, betela dato etzel kol adam. Then we say that his action is nullified. It is such an outlandish action, we don't consider it to be action. It's not normal eating. It's not the normal way to engage with such an item. And that's where we say, lo matzin and truma b'mechuber lekarka. You don't have truma b'mechuber lekarka. That means that you try to eat it while it's mechuber lekarka. That's not called achila truma for chiyumita b'dei shemayim and for chomesh. But with regards to it actually being truma, maybe there's a possibility that it could be truma. Where it says, umay shna midichtiv apinkoso di ilfa. What about the fact that it was written on the notebook of ilfa? Ilfa is the chover of Rabbi Yochanan. The story is told that Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were both learning in the Beit Midrash. They were impoverished. They couldn't survive anymore. And so they decided they were going to go into business and go out and make money. So they're sitting on a bench, planning their future to go out and make some money so that they could actually live. And Rabbi Yochanan hears birds or malach behind him. Let us have this wall fall on top of these individuals because they're leaving the world of Torah to go deal with the world or the Olam Hazeh. And Rabbi Yochanan turns to Ilfa and he says, did you hear that? And Ilfa says, no, what are you talking about? I didn't hear it. Rabbi Yochanan surmises that it was said about him. The message, or the bat kol, they were upset that this person who was going to be a Rosh Yeshiva is walking away from the world of Torah to go into business. So because Ilfa doesn't hear it, Rabbi Yochanan surmises it's about him. Rabbi Yochanan stays in the yeshiva in his impoverished state. Ilfa goes out to do business and is very successful at his business. When Ilfa comes back, Rabbi Yochanan is already appointed as the Rosh Yeshiva. And by his appointment as the Rosh Yeshiva, part of the benefits of being the Rosh Yeshiva is they give you a house, they take care of you, you become a little more wealthy, and that takes care of his situation. When Ilfa comes back, they say to him, had you been here, we would have made you the Rosh Yeshiva over Rabbi Yochanan. But you weren't around, you were out doing business, and so they made Rabbi Yochanan the Rosh Yeshiva. Ilfa then goes and climbs up the mast of the ship that he was on, and says that, I want anybody to ask me a question, and if I can't find a source for that in the Mishnah or in the Braita, then I'll fall from here. And he goes out, he answers all the questions that the people have. He wanted to show that he hadn't lost any of his learning, even though he went out to business. So this is what's written on the Pinkas of Ilfa, the Chaver of Yochanan. Beitzei nevela ta'of ha'tahor. The eggs of a nevela that comes from an of tahor. So remember that by nevela of tahor, it's not mitamei, with the exception of when you swallow it. It's mitamei, what's called bebeit habliyah. When you swallow it and it goes into your throat, that's the only time it creates tumah. But by itself, a dead kosher bird is not mitamei. It is a nevela, but it's not mitamei. If you consume it, then it is mitamei. So now we have an egg of a nevelat of tahor. Miksatan bachutz or miksatan bifnim. A portion of it is internal, a portion of it is external. Mibifnim mitamim begadim abeit habliyah. That which is internal, if you consume it, if you swallow it, it will convey tumah when it reaches the beit habliyah. Mibachutz, that which is already external to the bird, emitamim begadim abeit habliyah. It does not have the status of nevelat of tahor. Mitamim begadim abeit habliyah means that when you swallow it, you become tumah, as well as the begadim that you are wearing. Narashi explains the scenario over here. It's a case where you have an egg that is what's called mi'ura b'gidin, that is still internally attached to the bird, and it's wrapped in the blood vessels and all those things that surround the egg before it detaches and hardens to leave the bird. So a portion of it already is exited from the bird. A portion of it is internal to the bird. You can see Rashi says here, "Kugom beitzina meurim b'tarna golet u'miksatam b'chutz shebishat mitata hitchila atil beitzata." The time that it was dying, it began to lay the egg that was coming out. Batanya de b'gmara de beitza. Ochel minivlet of tohor, umina shalal so beitzim tohor. Someone who eats from an nivlet of tohor, or shalal so beitzim, or from the egg. Mitok manami bitalishnu v'achlinu avrai. That's when they already were separated and eaten externally. Aval achlinu agavai, but if you eat them internally, hachanami dimitamo, then it would create tuma. So Rashi notes over here that the difference between a case where the eggs are tahor or the eggs are tamei, or take on the properties of the nevelat of tamei, has to do with where they're found. If they're external, if they're separated away from the bird, they don't have a din of nevela. If they are internal to the bird, then they do have a din of nevelat of tahor. Here you have a case where you have an egg that's half external, half internal. And despite the fact that the egg is internal, which means that it's quote-unquote mechubar to the bird, when you eat it from the bird, you still are mitamei begadim abeit ablia. So that shows you that even when you lean over and eat something that is mechubar, the karka, let's call it, that's still called achila. You just told me that when it comes to bending over and eating something in the ground, that's not called achila. Over here, we see that even though it's mechubar to the bird, and Rashi claims the case here is where he stuck his mouth up against the body of the bird and ate the egg from the bird itself, that that's considered to be an echila, and you're tamei when you do such an achila. So how come over there, by the tumah, you're telling us, tela dato etzo kol adam, and over here, you're telling us, oh, if he eats it, that's an achila that makes him tamei. So the Gemara answers that there's a difference, because talush, avede inesh dachle, hachi. When it comes to something that is detached, people eat in this manner. A bird is detached. So people will eat something that's mechubar to a detached item. But mechubar, something that's attached to the ground, people don't eat something that is still mechubar to the karka. So even though you created a parallel case, it's not really a parallel case. Anything that's still mechubar the karka, attached to the ground, people don't bend over and eat it while it's still attached from the ground. They generally detach it from the ground, and then they eat it. They won't eat it while it's still hanging from the tree, while it's still in the ground. They don't generally do that. And if he does it, it's unusual. Yeah, you can do it, but people don't do that. When you're speaking about an item that's already detached, but you have something that's mechubar to an item that is detached, over there, that's not unusual to eat such a thing. So the bird is already a detached item, but you have something that's mechubar to the bird. So to eat something that is mechubar to the bird while it's still mechubar to the bird, that's not an unusual manner to eat, and that will be classified as achila. So the Baal Yom Tov would agree with you. They quote Rashi, "Shat mita itzchila latzil beitzata shebifnim." At the time of death, it started to lay the egg. Kach perish akuntris. So he says, "V'zohi hilchata v'lo taima." This is a halacha that has no reason, no logic behind it. The adu v'shvil sheichnis pi v'toch me'eha, because the guy sticks his mouth into the belly or into the innards of the bird, yachashvu yoter basar, that they should be more fleshik. Because Rashi says over here, if you detach it, it's not fleshik, it's not nevela tov tahor. You leave it attached, it is nevela tov tahor. What is the attachment of the item to the bird have anything to do with whether it's basar or it's not basar? Elahotam mairi bigmurot. Shnigmar chalmon shalahem. We're talking about eggs that are finished, by which their yolk is already complete. Ba'filo lemandim naher nami be'inan gmurot, haino krovot ligmar, dumo maru kulehai. And even according to one who says that these items are generally tahor, that's only when they are not fully finished, but they're very close to being finished. Ba'haidim et taher hacha, shibichut, haino taimim mishum demita ose nipo. That's why the reason that stuff outside is considered to be tahor, it's because death detaches anything that's outside the animal. It's the equivalent of dropping anything that's outside of the animal. So what the Baal Yom Tov Sefot speak to is actually a problem in halacha, a general problem in halacha, which is that when you shech the bird, or when you have a bird that has eggs internally, how do you know when the eggs are parva, that which we know any egg that's laid by a bird is parva, versus they consider to be fleshik because it's internal to the bird. So there is a transition point, which in halakha they spend a lot of time on. When does it move from being internal and a part of the bird to being an independent object? So that's what they speak about, me'ura b'gidin. When it's still wrapped in all the blood vessels and the veins that go around the egg, that's still considered to be a part of the bird and is fleshik. Once it starts to develop into a full enough sense, like over here, the Tosafot says that you got to the point where you, Gemara Chomonshlo, the yoke already is totally complete, but yet it's not independent enough, then it still has a din, like it's attached to the bird. Tosafot says that this egg is not far enough along in the development for it to be considered to be independent. Even the one who says that an egg found internally is okay, that's only when it's so far along in the development that it's barely attached internally. There aren't blood vessels running over it. The shell's hardened. So that's something that's independent. Over here, where you're before that stage, then that's not considered to be something that is independent, and therefore it takes on the status of Nevela Tov Tor. You ask then, well then why is the part that is external considered to be independent? The egg is not far enough along in its development that it should be considered to be independent when it's half expelled. Obviously, it started to lay the egg. It was either very ill or sick and was laying it before it was mature, the egg. But Tosfot introduces a principle called Mita Osen Nipul, which is that death causes anything external to the animal to be as if it's been dropped off. So that even though technically the item is still attached to the bird, anything that's external, death automatically cuts off anything that's external. So the Bali Tosfot suggests that that's what's happening over here, that that's why this egg has its status. It has nothing to do with putting your mouth up against it, but it has to do with the mechubar, something that's attached, has the same din. And then when you eat it, or a person eats it, even though it's considered mechubar to the item, you're still classified as achila, and that achila will make you tameh. That's the nature of the question of the Gemara. And then the Gemara answers, talosh is different than mechubar. It's something that's detached already. If you eat directly from that, according to Rashi, over here, if Tosafot eats something that's mechubar to it, that's not considered to be unusual, whereas eating something directly from the ground is much more unusual. And then the Tosafot says, "Im tomar umenar leit mari hocha b'achlan b'fnim." How do you know that he put his mouth and ate them internally, meaning that he chewed it out of the bird? Dilma b'tashlishnu b'achlinu. How do you know that it's not a case where he detached it and then ate it, which would be the simpler way to explain the case? How do you know it's still attached when he's eating it? B'esh lamar d'ibitalishnu. Had he already detached him, then they should have been gozer, that which is outside, atu bifnim. If you're dealing with an object that's detached, half of it is tamei tumat nevelatov, and half of it is not, then in that case you would have to be gozer, the part that's tahor, atu the part that's tamei, because they're maybe even indiscernible. Or how would you know? Because you were talish. The only way to have it be that the external part would not be tamei, and the internal part will be tamei, is if they're still attached, they're still in place, and therefore it's clearly identifiable what is bachutz and what is bifnim. So that's what Tosafot says compelled the Gemara to go in this direction and say that it has to be while he's eating it while it's still attached. Otherwise, he thinks that the whole thing would have to be asur because of the fact that you do gzeira at chutz atu bifnim. That's the Bali Tosafot, which is the second. The Rabbeinu Tam brings a third explanation. The Rabbeinu Tam says, Matzah b'sefer Rabbeinu Gershon, Ma'ai nevelat of tahor. The intestines, the internals of a bird that died. So now it is a nevelat of tahor. So dercha of samuch lemitato. For some reason, birds near their death, when they are sick, yotzim me'av lachutz. It expels its intestines or its intestines come out. Bikamar. And that's what the Gemara is speaking about over here. Shibifnim itamim begadim abet ablia. That part of the intestines or internal organs that remain inside have a status of nevelat of tahor. Even though they're disgusting, and normally people wouldn't eat them. We still don't say b'teila dato etzel kol adam. But, so then when he bends over and eats them, why do you say b'teila dato etzel kol adam? And then the answer is, that even though people don't eat things that are ma'us, but when it's an object that's detached, they have more latitude in what they will eat, or people make different decisions about detached objects than they do about attached objects, and even though it's not something maybe they would normally eat, over here they would. So Rabbeinu Tam said it's not even speaking about an egg, it's speaking about the whole internal system, that for whatever reason, birds, when they die, especially when they're sick, expel some of their innards as they are dying, and that's what we're talking about, mi bifnim and mi bachutz. The Gemara then rejects the comparison, and the question that we had, whether you make something into Chuma when it is Mechubar the Karka, that we left unresolved because we had no way to solve the problem. So Amar of Tavyumi Barkisna Amar Shmuel, Hazorea kilayim ba'atzitz she'enu nakuf. Someone who plants kilayim, which otherwise would be a sur, but it's in a pot that has no hole in it. This is something that we discussed before. It comes up many times in Shas. A pot that has a hole in it is assumed to be mechuber the karka, and therefore it takes on all the status of items that are planted in the karka, all the dinim of mitzvot ha'tuliyot ba'aretz, or dinim ha'tuliyim ba'aretz. Whereas if you plant something in a pot that is not attached to the ground, that means it doesn't have a hole in it, that is considered to be separate or independent of the aretz. It is chayav in shumot masod midrabanan. There are many halachot that apply to it, midrabanan, not midoraita. And similarly here, the Gemara is discussing the issue of kilayim. If you have kilayim in such a pot, which is not attached to the ground, what is the status of this? So we say asur. It's still considered to be kilayim. Amar Abaye, bishlama ishma'inan lokem makat mardut midrabanan shapir. If you told me that it gets malkot midrabanan, I would understand what you're saying. Because the kilayim in a pot that is not attached to the ground, all the dinim that deal with the aretz are all midrabanan. So if you tell me that he planted kilayim, then he's in violation of a din derabanan, and we're going to give him malkut, makat mardut, for violating a din derabanan. El asur, my kamashmalan. So what are you telling me means asur? Asur in din derabanan doesn't really have any meaning. Meaning that when the rabbanan say something's asur, there are only two options. One is that you get malkot, you're going to get makat mardut if you do it, or it's mutar, and you can't do it. Saying something is asur with din derabanan is not so meaningful. That might have some semblance of the khatira that's given between mitzvah d'oraita versus mitzvah d'rabbanan, which is that mitzvah d'oraita are generally considered to be an issue with the chetza. So you're dealing with something that's not kosher min haTorah, like a pig, the chetza itself is not kosher. But when you deal with something that's d'rabbanan, the rabbanan can't change the status of an item. What they can change is your interaction with it and tell you that you're not allowed to interact with this item. So similarly over here, if you have kilayim midoraita, that kilayim is asur. The chetz of kilayim is asur. Over here, we only have kilayim midrabanan. The kilayim in the Torah are regular plants. They don't have any isur associated with them. The rabbanan come along and say, that is kilayim. But they can't make it asur, the item itself. They can tell you, you can't interact with it. You can't eat it because it is what we call kilayim. You can't get hanah from it because it's what we call kilayim. What they can't do is make the object itself asur. So to say asur over here is not so meaningful. It should say, you get makat mardut if you violate it. That's really what they're telling you. They're telling you about what the relationship is between the individual and the kilayim. To say asur doesn't really have any bearing within the din of the rabbonon. My answer is, ma'ikam ashvalon, dimidarabonon av yegzriya. That teaches you that rabbinically, what is done here is classified as zriya. Tanina, we've already seen that in a Tanaic work. Taram, misha'inu nakuv, al nakuv. If you take off truma from a pot does not have a hole in it, means it's not mechuber the karka. On a pot that does have a hole in it, which is classified as a mechuber the karka, something that is chayav midoraita. So truma, that truma that you take off is classified as truma, the absorbi trum. And then you need to take off truma a second time from that which is in the deoraita one that is chayav, because that which you took off from the derabonan one doesn't help you for the deoraita. So then you have double the truma, you're going to have to give extra truma over here. So you see that we already have that din, that this is classified as zriyah, because then when you pull the truma out and you make it into truma, we classify it as truma. Truma midrabanan, but we classify it as a truma. So you see that the rabbonon classify or deem it to be zriyah, because otherwise you wouldn't have to give truma from it, not even truma midrabanan. The fact that we say that your truma that you take off of it is classified as truma midrabanan shows you that it is zriyah, and that you have to then go and take off the truma d'oraita to deal with that. But the truma that you took off classified as truma. From here we have, number one, a din that we learned from the fact that it's classified as kilayim. That means not only is it asur, meaning that you get makat mardut for it, but more importantly, it has the status of zriyah, and that has implications. Once it's classified as zriyah, then all the dinim of haaretz apply to it. That means you take off trumot, masrot, midrabanan. All the dinim that you would normally apply to something that's planted in the aretz and skaya midoraita, you're going to plant to this plant that is planted midrabanan. But the Gemara points out that that's not really a chidush because we already can derive that from the Mishnah in Demai. Now the next Mishnah says, hachitin, wheat, vasorim, barley, vakusmin, spelt, vashibolet shu'al, oats, Vashifon, which is rye, Hari Elu Chayavin Bechala. These five minei dagan require chala to be taken off of them. Umitztarfim ze im ze. And they can be mitztarev together, meaning they can be brought together to create the minimum shiur that you need in order to cross the threshold to be chayav in chala. Ve'asurim bechadash. These items are governed by the Omer. What is asur before the Omer? These five minei dagan are prohibited. They are chadash until you cross over the threshold of the Omer, and then they become yashan. Milifnei ha-Pesach. The gears that we have in our Gemara is that they're asur bechadash from before Pesach, umalei ktsor, and to do ktsira on them, lifnei ha-Omer. Before the Omer, Rashi on the Amud Bet, the Shita Mekubetzet also does it, and you can see over here, the Reshak also changes the girsa and flips this around. It makes more sense to have it be that asur b'chadash lifnei ha-Omer, they're asur and chadash before the Omer, and umalei ktsor lifnei ha-Pesach. And you can't do ktsira before Pesach. The reason to differentiate is that the ktsirat Omer is done on Motzei Pesach. And once you've done ktsirat Omer, then the ktsira of the other grains or grains outside of the Mikdash are mutar. Ktsira is asur on Pesach itself. You can't do it on Yom Tov. So that means that you can't cut these items milifnei Pesach. Before Pesach, you can't do ktsira. On the day of first day of Pesach itself, it's not relevant because it's Yom Tov. By the time you get to Motzei Pesach, they're already doing Ktsira to Omer. Once they've done Ktsira to Omer, then Ktsira is Mutar. So that's why you would say Milifnei Pesach with regards to Ktsira, and Milifnei Omer with regards to Chadash, because that's applicable all the way up to the Avat to Omer, meaning that even on the first day of Yom Tov, you still have an Isur Chadash with regards to these items, and it is relevant all the way through to the point of Avat Omer. So they flip the Girsat, and it makes more sense. If they took root before the Omer, ha-Omer matziran. Then the Omer is matir. This is the mission that we quoted in the Gemara, that hashrasha is the key threshold to know whether the Omer of this year is matir, or you have to wait for the Omer the next year. If it's already rooted, then the Omer on this year takes care of it. If it has yet to be rooted, asurim et shivo Omer abba. Then they are asurim until the next year, Omer covers them. All right. Tana, we have a braita that tells us, kusmin min chitim. Spelt is a subset of wheat. Shibolet shual bishipon min seorim. And oats and rye are a subcategory, subset of barley. So Rashi says over here, le'inyan chala. Itzrik tarmina mesechet chala. Because we say mesechet chala. Hachitin in mitztarfim makol. Chutz min hakusmin. Wheat and spelt can mix together. Otherwise, they can't be mixed together. Se'orim mitztarfim imakol. Se'orim also mixed together, chutz min achitim, but they can't mix with the chitim. So you see here that there are certain grains that are considered to be matches when it comes to these grains. And that's what our Mishnah says over here, that says, mitztarfim ze'im ze'. The Tosefta that they bring is coming to explain what it means, mitztarfim ze'im ze. It doesn't mean all five grains mixed together. It means that only certain of these grains can be mixed together. If you make a challah that's mixed from wheat and spelt, they can combine to make a single entity that's big enough to be chayav and challah. But if you mix wheat with barley, or if you mix wheat with shibolet shual, that would not be the case. That's what Rashi says. The Bali HaTosafot about this Tosefta say, lav the inyan kilayim mitnaya. This is not about kilayim. This is not about which are considered to be species that belong together, don't belong together for kilayim. Number two is, let's say, matzah bepesach lo mitnaya. This is also not talking about or speaking about the mitzvah of matzah on Pesach. That's also not what it's speaking about. Ela the inyan chala mitnaya. It's written about chala, like Rashi explained over here. Ulahochi maitela matzniten. That's why it's brought on our Mishnah. The mitnaya legabe chala, because our Mishnah discusses the chala. V'ach breita lo plige amatniten. This breita, this Tosefta, doesn't argue on our Mishnah. The mitztarfim, the matniten lava kulu kuamar shenitztarfu zeim ze. Our Mishnah is not telling you that they all get together, but rather it's saying some of them are mitztareif together, and then the Tosefta clarifies on that. V'chei perisha kuntris. That's what Rashi explains over here. Umil achinam dacha. Rashi doesn't have to go through difficulty in his explanation because Bikan Bibalul. Tosfot says that the Yerushalmi already deals with this in Masechet Chala and explains exactly what's said in the Tosefta. And what about the fact that our Mishnah seems to be Mitztarfim Zein Zeh? The Rashi reconciled that by saying it doesn't literally mean starfim zeh zeh, that everything can be mitzarev with each other, but based on the guidance of the Tosefta, you know what can be mitzarev with each other. Tosfot says that's not correct. Tosfot says it's a difference between whether they're mixed together or they're separate. He says there we're talking about when they are separate and then you want to join them together. Kan bibalul. Over here it's where they were mixed together, they were kneaded together in one entity. Or say you have flour that's made up of a certain percentage of wheat, certain percentage of barley. That would be mitzaref, according to the Baal Tosafot, because it's balul. It's mixed completely together. That's when you have the din of our Mishnah, mitzarevim zeh zeh legamrei. Doesn't matter which one of the species you're speaking about over here. They can be mixed together, and they'll have a status of a single unit that can be chayav and chala. So then where is the Tosefta speaking about? Tosefta speaking about a case where you made them independently. You made each one of the doughs independently, and then when you're baking them, they're no sheikh. You know, that happens sometimes when you bake chala, when you bake cookies, they spread and they attach together. So while you were meeting them and putting them together, they ended up attaching together, and that makes them into a single unit. Over there, that's where the Tosefta is speaking about, that this kusmin is mitzarif bechitin, so on and so forth. The difference is in the species that are there. So if they're separate entities, and you want to know if they can be mitzarif, that's where the Tosefta comes in. Our mission is thinking about where it's completely mixed. Over there, any one of these minim, because they're all chayav and chala, they're mixed together in such a way where they're indiscernible, then they'll all be mitzarif to get you the minimum threshold to be chayav and chala. The other thing the Baal Tosfot just happened to note over here, it says over here that the kusmin is a subset of chitin, and then it says the seorim match with everything except chitin. That implies that seorim also can be matched up with spelt. But the way that the Tosefta says it is that kusmin match with chitin, shibolet shuwal with shifon match with barley. It never mentions that the barley can mix with the kusmin. So what the Baal Tosfot would say is they explain it in the following manner. It says, Tachikamar, kusmin af min chitin. Kusmin not only match with the barley, they also match with chitin. Don't read it that they just match up with the chitin. They also match up with the chitin. Shibolet shuwal v'shifon min ha-seorim davka. Whereas oats and rye only match up with the barley, not with the chitin. And even though you have some of these minim, some of these species that are actually kilayim, echad v'sheni, nevertheless, as the Baal Tosfot will point out, chala is not dependent on that. Chala is dependent on which item is chayav and chala. If you share that in common, that you're both chayav and chala, then that's enough to have you be mitzarev. So even though if you planted them together, they'd be problematic as kilayim, once you've already processed them and you have flour from each one of them and you bake them, or you knead them together and they're next to each other, they can be mitzarev for chala because they're both chayav and chala, which is the most important factor over here. Are you chayav and chala? So that's independent, irrespective of whether they're kilayim with each other. But again, here, the minim being mixed together, according to the Tosefta, the Baal Tosafot, is only relevant when they are separate. But if they're mixed together, then our Mishnah governs, which is mitzarfim zein zeh. For Rashi, the Mishnah is qualified by the Tosefta. When our Mishnah says mitzarfim zein zeh, that's only based on what the Tosefta said. And so the Tosefta allows only for certain mixtures, and that's where it's mitzarev, not that it's generically mitzarev. Again, the Baal Tosfot disagree and say if you mix them well, then they're all mitzarev. Right now, the Gemara does what we normally do with the Gemara. We're reading a Gemara in Aramaic, we're reading in Hebrew, and we're translating into English. The Mishnah is written in Hebrew, they live in Bavel, and so they need the Hebrew in the Mishnah, especially when it's talking about the identity of something, they need that translated into Aramaic. And that's what the Gemara does now. Kusmin Gulba. So they translate kusmin, the Hebrew word, into Aramaic, which is gulba. And look at Rashi, aspilta. It is spelt. Shifon, the rye, is dishra. Shibolet shual, oats, is shibule ta'ala. Gemara just gives you the translation of those words into Aramaic. Again, for us, we're translating into English anyway. Hane in. These five species, yes. Orez vidochan lo. But rice and millet, no. The items that are mentioned here have the properties that make them chayavot in chala. And we'll see later on, because the Mishnah also says that's true, they have a din of chadash. That's true of these five species. It's not true of rice and millet. Minahane mile. How do you know that's the case? Amarish lakish, atya lechem, lechem mi matzah. Gzir shavav lechem from matzah. Tivacha, it says over here, vayabokul chemi lechem haaretz. when you eat from the bread of the land, that's found at the end of Parshat Shlach, where it says, "Vayavach holchem ilechem haaretz, tarimu tshuma l'Hashem." What is that tshuma? Rishit harisotechem, chala tarimu tshuma, tshumat agoren, kein tarimu l'ta. It says there, "Vayavach lechem ilechem haaretz." You have the word lechem over there. And Tivotam, by Pesach, by Matzah, it says, lechem oni, the bread of affliction. So lechem, lechem. So you see, just like by Matzah, only the five grains are made into matzah. So over here, challah, you only chayev it in challah when you use the five grains. V'hotam gufa minalan. How do you know by matzah that you can only use the five grains? Amarish lokish, v'chein tana debe Rabbi Shmuel. So Amarish lokish, also the Braita of Rabbi Shmuel. V'chein tana debe Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and also a Braita from the Beit Midrash, Eliezer ben Yaakov. Amar Kral, the Pasuk, has an adjacency, a juxtaposition of lo tochal alav chametz. There's a parallel between the restriction against chametz and the positive commandment to eat matzah. Dvarim habaim lidei chimutz, adam yotzei behem yidei chovato bepesach. Something that potentially could become chametz, that is what is usable to make matzah on Pesach. Yatsu elu shein baim lidei chimutz elidei sirachon. That excludes these items, rice and millet, where if you ferment them, they will not rise. They will not become chametz, but rather they will spoil. They will go bad. So since rice and millet can't create chametz, they can't be used for matzah. Because the Torah parallels the two and says, that which is good for chametz, or that which can make chametz, is what then is usable to make matzah. It's a very important din with regards to matzah. First of all, it tells us which species are allowed to be used as raw materials for matzah, and those are the five grains, because only the five grains are mechametz, do they rise because they're left to ferment, versus any other species which instead rots, number one. Number two is that you have to use an item and in a state in which it will become chametz. So for those who believe, which we discussed earlier in the Masechta, that if you put mei peirot together with these flowers, that it'll never become chametz, then that is asur to be used for matzah. Leaving aside matzah ashira, which here it says lechem oni, it can't be mei peirot because of matzah ashira. So matzah ashira you can't use to be yotzi yedei chovato, but maybe you could eat it on Pesach, but matzah ashira, it may be problematic not just because it's made by mei peirot, but because it can't become chametz. According to those rishonim that believe that mei peirot don't make chametz, then you can't use them to make matzah because it's not matzah. Matzah is only something that could have been chametz, and here it stopped from being chametz, then it's matzah. But if it never can become chametz, it's not matzah. And if you need water in order to drive the process of chimutz, according to many rishonim, instead of just using fruit juices, then without that water, whatever you make is not deemed to be matzah, irrespective of the issue of matzah ashira. It also has implications in terms of shmirah. It says, "Ushmartem et ha-matzot." Which again is an indication that only something that requires shmirah is deemed to be matzah. Shmirah means you have to watch it or stop it from becoming chametz. It can't become chametz, then it can't become matzah. Now, that is, first of all, a halachic connection, which has ramifications. According to many, that's the only matzah that you can have that's matzah k'sherah for the Seder, is matzah that was made at a time when chametz was asur. So there are many who have the minog to only eat matzah either that was made on Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach bizman when there's an Isur chametz in that half part of the day, the latter half of the day where there's an Isur chametz, the matzot that are baked then, whether matzot of Erev Pesach, those matzot are the ones that are makpid to use with the Seder, because those matzah were made not only with something that has potential for chametz, but at a time of Isur chametz. And some take it even further, that not only do you need an Isur Chametz on Erev Pesach, which is a lower form of Isur Chametz, you need an Isur Chametz of Karet, which only comes in on Pesach itself. So some people are makpid that they only eat matzot for the light of the Seder that were baked on the night of Pesach, the night of the Seder, because then there's a real Isur Chametz, and you made the matzah in the context of that Isur Chametz. So first of all, that has, again, halachic ramifications, but also has ashkafic ramifications, which is that matzah is only something that has the potential of chimutz. That matzah is a product that had chimutz, but that chimutz was either squelched or was managed. And therefore, it was only called matzah in the context or in the contrast to chametz. And that teaches us a little bit about the chametz or chimutz, which is compared to the satan or compared to the yetzer hara, that the holiday of Pesach is about the eradication of the yetzer hara, the removal of the yetzer hara, the satan from us. And therefore, matzah has to be something that had the potential of yetzer hara, had the exposure to that risk, but that risk was overcome and was squelched. If you don't have the potential to do bad or the potential to make a mistake, then there's no matzah. You haven't created anything. You can only create something if there's some sort of counterforce that would otherwise lead you in a different direction. And so that people's accomplishments and what they do has to do not only with what they do, but what the alternative was had they not gone in this direction, or that which pulled them in the other direction. And so that's the nature of chametz and matzah. And there's also much to be said about the fact that on Pesach we're only allowed to have matzah, but there is chametz on Shavuot. And that we believe that even though the eradication or the elimination of the Yetzer Hara is the first stage, the real victory or the real accomplishment that we want is not to eradicate the Yetzer Hara, but rather to turn the Yetzer Hara into a positive force. And that's represented by the Shtei Alechem on Shavuot after the Matzah on Pesach. But you need the transition in between, which is the Sfirat Omer or Mamad Har Sinai or the Torah. And that only in the context and the misgeret of Torah can you have chametz. You can't have chametz just willy-nilly or outside of a context or not being managed by a proper misgeret like the Torah. That's what the beginning of the Geula is about. And Pesach is about the matzah, the eradication of it. And then once you've eradicated it, then you can then slowly have it rise in the proper context and the proper mindset. And that brings us or leads us to the Shtei Alechem of Shavuot. That's also a shkopek outcome of this parallel between that of matzah and chametz. Now the Gemara says, "Umitztarfim zeim ze." They are mitztaref together, these five species. Tana, atvua, vakimachim, vabatzekot, mitztarfim zeim ze. Both grain, flour, and dough are all mitztaref together. The mayhilchata. What's this halacha about? Amrav Kana, linyan chodosh. That makes sense when you're speaking about chodosh. Chodesh can be any one of these forms. It can be in the form of a grain, it can be in the form of flour, it can be in the form of a dough. All those are possible forms of chodesh. But when it comes to challah, challah is only chayav once it reaches the point of being a dough. While it's a flour, while it's a tvua, there's no chiyuv challah. So there it doesn't make sense to speak about a tvua, kamachim, and metzekot being mitzterik. Rav Yosef Amar, the chametz bepesach. That tells you that all these items have a classification of chametz pesach, and Rashi notes over here that they're mitztarfim. They are mitztarfim to get you the kazayit of isur chametz on pesach, and he points out the chitim nami machmitzin, that wheat kernels are also machmitz im sharan b'mayim, if you soak them in water. If you leave wheat kernels in water, they will ferment and they will also rise and they will turn into chametz. So you can have chametz from Tvua, you can have chametz as a butzek. You can also have chametz that comes from kemach. All of those can, when exposed to water, rise and become a chametz. So that would be the din with regards to Pesach. Tosafot in yesterday's daf points out, v'otam chitim shnimtzu b'mei ha-tarnegolet. And those little seeds of chitim that you find in the innards of the tarnegolet on Pesach, or b'sharofot, or other birds, roi lachmir lehem. You should be machmir them, they could be chametz. Because they're sitting in the belly, in the stomach of the bird. They are now kernels that were not mi'ukal. They were not digested properly or fully digested. They were digested, then they would be ruined and they wouldn't rise anymore. But here where you found them still in the stomach and they were exposed to a liquid, there's a risk that they're chametz. And you have to be very careful for them. If you cook the bird with them, it might have a problem of chametz making it problematic on Pesach. You should get rid of them or take them out of the bird and make sure that you mevayer them because of the risk that they are chametz. And that's what we're speaking about here. Kernels exposed to water would also be chametz. But Papa Marlein Maiser Sheni, di achelei chutz bechoma, loki. If you eat Maiser Sheni outside the wall of Yerushalayim, then you get Malkot. And that's true of any of these forms of Maaser Sheni. If you eat them outside of Yerushalayim, you're going to be Chayav. Rava Amar Le'inyan Tumat Ochlim. This has implications that they're all classified as Ochel, and therefore they can be Mitzdareif together to meet the minimum Shiur for Tumat Ochlim, which is a Kabetza, Machloket Rishonim with regards to Kabbalah Tumah. To convey Tumah, you need a minimum of a Kabetza with regards to Ochlim. To receive Tumah, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, in some places in Shas suggest that even Kabbalah Tumah requires a Kabetza. In other places in Shas, and many of the Rishonim believe that a kol shu is mikabel tuma. Any amount is mikabel tuma. It's only conveyance of tuma. But here they can be mitzdareif to get to that minimum shiur. Bahakamash malan, detvua vikamachim dumya de bitzekot. That tvua, grains, and flowers are similar to dough. Mahatam uchla be'ene, hachanami uchla be'ene. So just like there, it is ochel that is exposed and is ready to be used. Avacha, so tamir, it has to be uchla be'ene. It has to be the item that is exposed, as Rashi explains over here. Lafuke klipat se'urim, v'subim shebekamachim. That's to exclude the shell of the barley and the bran that comes away from the flowers. Delav uchlim ninu. Those are not edible. Those aren't foods. The lo mitzdarfe le kabetza. And they don't add up to the kabetza for tumat uchlim. So here it says that these items that are exposed and edible items, they are mitzdareif together for tumat uchlim, but the parts of the grain and the parts of the item that are not edible, even though they're mixed in, nevertheless, they are not mitzdareif to get you to that minimum shiur. So Gemara says, v'atanya, atanya is binichuta. The bright is brought as proof to the fact that shells don't count. Kita. Ben klupa, ben she'enu klupa, similar to the English, when it comes to a item that is shelled, that means that the shell was taken off of it. So to over here, chita ben klupa, ben she'enu klupa, whether it was shelled or unshelled, mitzterefet, it adds up towards the minimum shiur v'kabetza. Se'ora klupa mitzterefet, she'enu klupa, ena mitzterefet. A barley seed that is shelled, that is mitzteref. Because Rashi said there's nothing that's mafsik. There's nothing there that separates it from the other barley seeds. She'ena klupa, but if it still has its shell on it, aim its terefet. It does not add up. The bright is brought as proof to the fact that the se'ora, you see that it doesn't count towards the kabetza. Where it says, ini, is that really true? That by se'ora, the shell doesn't count. Ba'atana debay Rabbi Shmuel. Don't we have a bright from the Beit Midrash Rabbi Shmuel? Okol zera zerua asher yizareya. So this is in Vayikra Rav with regards to tumat ochlim and hechsher the kabel tumah. Says if mayim falls or tumah comes into contact, okol zera zerua asher yizareya. Kederech shbnei adam motzim lizria. Just like the way that people take it out to plant it. Chita beklipata. People plant the wheat kernel in its shell. Seora beklipata. And barley in its shell. Va'adashim et bikli patam. And lentils in their shells. So all of these items, the shells are going to count towards the tumat ochlim, because what determines whether they have tumat ochlim or not is the way you plant them. I call zera zerua. On a seed that you will plant. And since you plant these seeds in their shells will count towards the tumat ochlim in the minimum shiur. So lokasha, the Gemara says that these two brightot are not in contradiction. We can reconcile them. Habalachot. That depends on whether they're moist or whether they are dry. Rashi here brings two interpretations to that. In the first interpretation, he says, lachot, when they are moist, mitzdarfot, they are mitzdareif, deshomerhu. It is a protective covering at that point. This is something that is found in Maksekat Uksin. Maksekat Uksin, it says that with regards to tumat uchlim, that anything that is a yad, that is an extension by which you hold the item, and that's a shomer, a protective cover over it, is considered to be a part and parcel of it, and it will be mikabel tuma like it, and convey tuma like the item itself, and it's mitzdareif to the shiur. So here, where they are moist, then we consider the klipa, the shell, to be something that's protective, a shomer, and that's why it's mitzdareif. On the other hand, yiveshot, lo have shomer. When the shells are dried out, they're not really protective, demifarche v'nafle, because they crumble and fall off. So they're not a good shomer, and therefore they're not classified as a shomer. So that's the first way Rashi explains it. that when you have moist kernels, and that's the type, I guess, that you would plant in the ground, then the shell that is around them, first of all, is mitzdareif, and that is the way that you plant them. When they are yevoshot, they're dried out, then the shells are not mitzdareif, because the shell is no longer acting as a shomer. And generally, you would actually take off the shells from them once they have dried out. In Yenacher, Rashi gives a second explanation, which he doesn't love. Lachot, chazia klipatan lechol. When they are moist, the shells are edible. That dying rakotein, because they're still soft, the shells. V'zeh shamati, he says, I heard this, and that obviously means that the dried out shells are inedible because they are dried out. He says, v'lashon shamati kashuli. This lashon doesn't make so much sense to me. Ha'adikaimelon, shomrim itztafim l'tumat ochlim. Because we have a principle, it doesn't matter whether it's edible or not edible, a shomer, something that is a protective cover for the item, irrespective of whether it's edible or not, it's mitzdareif. So here, why does it matter if it's edible or not edible? The only thing that really matters, is it protective or not protective? And irrespective of whether it's edible or not. So Rashi does not love that explanation. The Rambam seemingly learns this just the opposite of Rashi. And he says that the lachot are not mitzdareif, whereas the dried shells are mitzdareif over here. And that is because it's that it has to do with planting, which is that when a seed is dried out, that's normally when you plant it. So the seed that's dried out, the shell on top of it, is the usual way to have it, because you plant it with the shell on it. Since the moist kernels are not what you plant, therefore the shell that's around it is not considered to be normal part of the item. And therefore the lachot, the shell is not mitzdareif. The yeveshot, the shell is mitzdareif. The Rambam wants it just the opposite of Rashi. The Baal Tosafot bring an interesting agadata from a second Ketubot that speaks about how do we know that at Tchiyat HaMetim, when the Metim arise, they're going to arise fully clothed? Because he says, Umachita shinigberet aruma. Just like a seed that is planted naked, Motziah kama levushim. When it grows out, it comes out in all these clothing, all this chaff and all these heads that surround the kernels. So you think about wheat. How much excess there is besides the kernels. The kernels are just at the head, at the top. They have a stalk, and they have a head. They have all these things that cover it. But they were put into the ground naked, yet they come out fully dressed. So too, the Meitim, even though they went into the ground naked, or they went to the ground uncovered, they're going to come out fully dressed. So Gemara says, from our Gemara over here, it sounds like that that's not the normal way to plant a seed. Over here it says, the bright thing, you plant the seed with the shell on it. That's why we had a question on the whole Gemara over here, because we had seeds with shells on them. So, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Dahaki Kamar. This is what's meant by the Agadat over there. Afilu Aita Nikberet Aruma. Even if you put the seed in without its shell, it still comes out fully dressed afterwards. So even though it may not be the normal way to plant the seed, but if you did put the seed in without anything on it, when it grows fully dressed. And so too, that's a Kal V'Chomer L'Meitim that are Omer L'Tfiyat HaMeitim. And so now the Gemara continues and says, Basarim B'Chadash M'Lifnei. We'll go with the Girsa Rashi HaOmer. Menahar Emile. How do you know that these five grains are the only things that are restricted for the Omer? Other foods and other fruits and other items are not governed by the Omer. It's only the Chameshit Minei Dagan that are governed by the Omer. Amar Shlekvish Atya Lechem, Lechem Mimatzah. You also have by the Omer, Lechem V'Kali V'Karmel, Lo Tochlu Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Ala V'Yachem Et Kurban Elokechem, Hukat olam ledorotechem v'chol moshvotechem. So the word lechem here appears by the chadash. And the truth is that it also has the aspects that we spoke about in the Gemara. Lechem, kali, and karmel. So kali is flour. Lechem is the batzeg. Karmel is the tvuah, the grain itself. So those are the three different forms that we mentioned in the Gemara before. That the tvuah, kamachim, and batzekot are mitztarfim zeim zeh. And that's what Rav Kahana said, the Inyan Chodosh. Because the Pasuk actually mentions all three of those items. But amongst those three items is the word Lechem. And the same way that we had a Gzeir Shava by Chalah, from Lechem to the Lechem of Pesach, so to over here we have a Gzeir Shava of Lechem, Kali v'Kormel, that Lechem of Gzeir Shava to Matzah, just like with Matzah, only the Chameshit Minei Dagan, so to over here, only the Chameshit Minei Dagan. So here Rashi explains the question of Menahane Milei, as being the question as to how do you know the Chameshit Minei Dagan and not Orez and Dochan. Similar to the question that we asked before with regards to Chala, Asking the same question here with regards to the Chodosh. The Baal HaTosafot are bothered by that because the expression of the Gemara doesn't follow it. The Gemara earlier said, when it brought that with regards to Challah, that it includes the Chamesh Minei Dagan and excludes Orez V'Dochan. How come it doesn't say that over here? Mekasha, Davalei the Medak and the Daik Leil, Hanei In, Orez V'Dochan Lo. Ela Nira, the Itztrich L'Rabot Chamesh Minim. The reason that you have to have the Chamesh Min here is, the Lotema Davkes Se'orim, the Mighty Omer Minei. The Tosfot sees this going in the other direction. Whereas by Challah, you might have thought it applies to everything. That's where it came and narrowed it down to the Chameshet Minei Dagan, and that's to the exclusion of Orez and Dochan. Over here, you might have had the opposite Havamina, that had you had no Gzeres Shavah, you would have thought it only applies to Se'orim, because the Omer derives from Se'orim, and therefore the only thing that would be Asur and Chadosh would be Se'orim, like the Omer. Along comes the Lechem Lechem, to teach you that not only is it the Se'orim, but all Chameshet Minei Dagan have Shaychul to the Isur of Chadosh. That's how the Baal HaTosafot learned, versus the way that Rashi learns it. Rashi throws it as a source to what is Asur V'Chadash. Tosafot says, the Havamina is not everything, and then to the exclusion of Orez and Dochan. Rather, the Havamina is Se'orim, and this comes to include the other four Minei Dagan. B'liktzor, lifnei Pesach, I'm going to use Rashi's Birsa. Minahane Mile. How do we know that's the case? On Rabbi Yochanan, Achia Reshit, Reshit Michala. We learn first from Chala. The first of the Ktzira will be brought up to the Kohen to be used as the Omer, similar to by Challah, where it says, Reshit Arisotechem. The first piece that you take off, that piece will be given to the Kohen. And so just like the Reshit by Challah is a reference to the Chamesh Minei Dagan, so too the Reshit by the Omer, which is the requirement that it be the Reshit Ktzira, is only a reference to the Chamesh Minei Dagan. And the restriction of Ktzira, Lifnei Ktzira to Omer, only has application to the Chamesh Minei Dagan. My Kodem La Omer, what does it mean before the Omer? Rabbi Yona Omer, Kodem Ktzira to Omer, that's before the harvesting of the Omer. Rabbi Yossi Bar Zabda Omer, Kodem Havata Omer, that's before the bringing of the Omer. So Rashi explains the machloket here of Amoraim with regards to Achilat HaChadosh. And that is that Rabbi Yona Amar, Kodem Ktzirat Omer, that Chadosh is only Asur before Ktzirat Omer. Rabbi Yossi Bar Zavda Amar, Kodem Havata Omer, only at the time of Havata Omer does it become Mutar B'Achilah. Now Rashi says, we don't find anywhere that anyone believes that right after Ktzirat Omer that you are Mutar B'Achilah. So he says that Ktzirat Omer is synonymous with Heir Mizrach. Since Ktzirat Omer is done at night, and Heir Mizrach is the end of the night, so that's synonymous according to this. Rabbi Yonah believes that Kodem Ktzirat Omer, Chadash is Asur, after Ktzirat Omer, Chadash is Mutar, that really means after his Heir Mizrach, that's when it's Mutar. And so the Gemara says, it's not. Asurim b'Chadash lifnei ha-Omer. Chadash is Asur before the Omer. V'liktzor lifnei ha-Pesach. And Ktzirat Omer is Asur before Pesach. As we explained before, the reason they use Pesach as the guideline for Ktzirah is because Ktzirah is done immediately on Motzei Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov itself, there is no Ktzirah. So that's why Ktzirah is Asur all the way up until Pesach. By the time the first day of Yom Tov is over, Ktzirah is going to be Mutar because you're going to do Ktzirat Omer right on Motzei Yom Tov. Vishlam alamad amar kodem avata Omer. According to the one who says that you're Asur b'chadash until the Omer is brought, Haynu d'loka ariblu. That's why it didn't put together Ktzirat Omer and Avat Omer, because they are two separate time periods. Ktzirat Omer happens at night, and Avat Omer happens during the day, meaning that the Heter Achilah is at a separate time from the Heter Ktzirah. The Heter Ktzirah happens at night. The Heter Achilah only happens in the daytime after the bringing of the Omer. Ella, the man, the Omer, Kodem Ktzirat Omer. The one who says that Chodosh is only Asur before Ktzirat Omer, but after Ktzirat Omer, it is Mutar. Learvinu v'litnu. Put them together in one unit in the Mishnah. Asurim b'chadash v'liktzor lifnei ha-Pesach. That you're Asur b'chadash and Ktzirah before Pesach. Because according to that Manda Amar, as soon as Eir Mizrach, as soon as the dawn breaks, so the sun rises on the 16th, you're Mutar b'Omer, and you're Mutar b'Ktzirah. even though the ktsira is at night and the heter of eating chadash only comes in the morning, nevertheless, as we said before, Rashi conflates the two and says that ktsira omer is at night and the morning is the beginning of the next day, and that's when you're mutar v'achila. The truth is that that's not so far-fetched, because generally they did not do ktsira at night because they had no lights to do it. Even though over here it's interesting because it would be around the full moon where you would have a harvest moon to go out at night and harvest, but let us suggest that most people wouldn't be going out on Motzi Yom Tov to do ktsira. So the next time that they actually will begin ktsira is at sunrise on the 16th, if they were to do it. Again, it's Chol HaMoed, so they may not be doing it anyway. But ktsira would be on the morning of the 16th, the same way that the Achilat Omer would be mutar. So why don't you just put them into one unit and say they're both Achila Chadash and the Ktsira of the Chadash is only Asur Lifnei Pesach. Once you get to after Pesach, or really Heir Mizrach on the 16th, they both become Mutarim. Rashi doesn't live that Girsa in the Sfarim, because Lifnei Pesach implies that once Pesach comes, you can eat the Chodosh, which isn't true. So he prefers that the Girsa read Litnu Asurim Chadash with the Ktsur Lifnei HaOmer, that both of them should happen at the same time, which is up until the Omer. And up until the Omer means up until Tzirat HaOmer, the next morning. So that's why Rashi changes the Girsa. The Balei Tosafot are obviously upset with Rashi because of this conflation of Tzirat HaOmer and Heir Mizrach. He says, "Beperish HaKodesh v'zeh dochak." The came to Heir Mizrach, Talya Milta, Lama Limitkat, Kodem Tzira. How can you conflate the sunrise on the 16th with Tzirat HaOmer, which is done at night, and say they're all one time? So Rashi thinks that their machloket is where is Chadash Asur until, and that we don't find anybody who says that Tzirat HaOmer is the cutoff, so he conflates Tzirat HaOmer v'Heir Mizrach. But Tosfot says, V'nira, he thinks the Goros, my kodem la Pesach. Machloket HaMarim over here is not about the Achila, rather about the Tzira. And the question is, what does it mean, kodem la Pesach, in terms of Tzirat HaOmer? V'koy Yahad, it's none. And it's going on the part of the Mishnah that says, Asur Liktzor, kodem la Pesach. What does it mean that you're not allowed to do ktsira before Pesach? Does that literally mean before Pesach, which is the same as meaning before ktsira to Omer? Or is before Pesach the same thing as havata Omer? And that the ktsira is asur until havata Omer. And on that, the Gemara says, Bishlamo, according to the one who says that ktsira to Omer is the cutoff for when you can do ktsira, then ktsira to Omer and havata Omer are two different times. Ktsira is mutar at night with ktsira to Omer. Havat Omer is matir le'achila during the day. But according to the one who says that ktsira is also not mutar until the Havat Omer, then why don't they put them together in one unit and say that both ktsira Omer and chodosh are only mutar b'Havat Omer on the 16th, because they both have the same time threshold. So Tosfot says their machloket is about when is ktsira Omer. Rashi says his machloket is about when achilat Omer is. But in either case, the Gemara has a question on one of the two opinions as to why they didn't then join them together into a single phrase within the Mishnah. Ella, itmar, asefa itmar. It must be that it's speaking about the latter half of the Mishnah. Imish rishu kodem omer, omer matiran. If they rooted before the omer is matiran. My kodem no omer. What does it mean before the omer? So Rabbi Yonah amar kodem ktsirat omer. Rabbi Yossi bar Zabda amar kodem havat omer. So at this point, the Gemara drops the previous assumptions and now believes that when it comes to Ktsirat HaOmer, once Ktsirat HaOmer is done, Ktsira outside of the Ktsirat HaOmer is now mutar. Havat HaOmer, the bringing of the Omer on the next day, is what's matir ba'akhila. The only question we have is with regards to Hashrasha, the last piece of the Mishnah, whereby when it roots, then it's covered by this year's Omer. If it doesn't root, then it's only covered by next year's Omer. By when does it need to be rooted in order for the Omer to cover it? And that's the machloket over here. Does it have to be rooted before Ktsirat Omer? Or does it have to be rooted before Havat Omer? So once it roots, where is the cutoff point for rooting that will make it mutar? So that would seem to be what the Gemara is discussing. That a given that Achila is governed by Hava, Ktsira is governed by Ktsira. Question is, rooting, what is it governed by? And that's the machloket over here. Amar lei Rabbi Elazar, the Rabbi Yoshaya de Dare. So Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yoshaya of his generation, meaning not the Tano, but the Amora that's in his generation. Lo te teva karech, Don't come off your feet. Don't sit down until you explain to me the following Mishnah. How do you know that the Omer is governed by rooting? How do you know that rooting is the threshold to know whether the Omer takes care of this or doesn't take care of this? He says rhetorically to him, Minolon? From where? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Aviv. The Pasuk says about the Omer that it is, Aviv kaloi ba'esh. La michal d'ika de lav Aviv. Doesn't that teach you that there's something that is not Aviv? So Aviv means the first item, the first, but it means the first that is mature. So you can only bring the Omer from something that reached maturation. But that implies that there are things in the field that have yet to reach their maturation, and the Omer is matir them. You can only bring the Omer from Aviv. But that means there are other things in the field that are not Aviv, and yet they are mutar. So what he suggests is Aviv, full maturation, is where you can bring the Omer from. Immature state, which means that it's already rooted, that is governed by the Omer. So he says back to him, who says that that is definitive? Dilma, the lava Aviv, Ulolam, the Ayol Shlish, meaning that you have a wide range between rooting and full maturation. So you're saying to me, okay, the Omer only comes from fully mature grains, but immature grains are covered by the Omer. Immature doesn't mean rooted. Immature can mean that it already grew one third of its height, which in general is considered to be already within the Onata Masrot. It's already begun the process of maturation where we would consider it to be Chashuv already. So maybe that's what it means. Once it's crossed over a threshold of a third, the Omer takes care of it. You can't bring the Omer until it reaches full maturation. You can't prove from there that Ashrosha is the factor. El Omer Shmuel, Mehechil Chemesh Bakama. From the time that you put the scythe to the standing grain. La Michlau Diga de La Bar Chemesh. It shows you that there's some stuff that's not ready to be cut by the scythe. If you have something that is cut by the scythe, that means it's ready to be taken in. Something that cannot be cut by the scythe is something that's too small. It hasn't even reached the shlish yet. I mean, it's something that's so immature or such an early stage that it's not able to be cut by the scythe. So that's also covered by the Omer. So again, the Gemara says here, Dilma, Dilav Bar Chemesh. Maybe it's something that's not cut by the scythe, Ololam Shachat, but it's still considered to be green. Shachat is when you cut it before it reaches a shlish of its growth, but it's used for animal feed. But it's something already that's emerged from the ground. Again, you don't have any proof that Ashrosha is covered. The only thing you have a proof is something less than Hechel Kremesh. So the Gemara assumes that once you get over a third of maturity, then you can put a scythe to it and you can cut it down, the standing grain. Okay, so that means that less than a third is covered by the Omer. But less than a third is not synonymous with rooting. It's synonymous with Shachat, something that's very immature. So that stuff will be covered by the Omer. But who said just rooting is enough? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kama. It says, Mehechel Kremesh Bakama, Lav Mechlau De Lav Bar Kama. So the fact that it's standing grain tells you that there's something that is not standing grain here that will be sufficient to be covered by the Omer. So the Gemara says again, Dilma De Lav Bar Kama, Ulolam Agam. Who says that non-standing grain means something that is rooted? It's so immature, such an early stage that it's just rooted. Maybe it means Agam. As Rashi says over here, it means to be bent over. You can turn the head over to touch the bottom. Sources from the Pasuk in Yishayahu, Lakuf ke Agmon Rosho. Will you bend over like the Agmon, his head? That's to turn over, to bend over from the head to touch the bottom, from the top to touch the bottom, and what the expression halachically is, when Rosho can touch Ikaro. So again, that's not standing grain, because it bends over, it can be, it's flexible, it's not the standing grain. But it's still already emerged from the ground. You still don't have proof that Ashrosha is covered by the Omer. El Omer Rova Asher Tizra. That it says in Parsha Mishpatim, not with regards to the Omer, but with regards to the Shtei Alechem, the Chaga Katsir, Bikurei Masecha Asher Tizra. The Chaga Katsir, the harvest festival, which is Shavuot, Bikurei Masecha, the first of your things that are brought, Asher Tizra, that you have planted. Now, even though it's speaking about Shavuot and the Shtei Alechem, we know already from our learning over the last number of days that the Shtei Alechem are similar to the Omer. Things that are brought from the Shtei Alechem can only be from items that were Nitara Yudea Omer. The Shtei Alechem is Matar in the Migdash, but it's already Mutar outside of the Migdash. So only something that crossed over the Omer and was Mutar by the Omer is allowed to be used for the Shtei Alechem. And it says here in the Pasuk, V'chaga katsir bikurei masecha sher tizra. So Asher Tizra is enough. So the Tizra had to be at the point of the Omer, because the Omer was Matirit. If you planted it, or it was only Zara between the Omer and the Shtelechem, you couldn't bring it for the Shtelechem. It has to be before the Omer. But you see that the qualification is Asher Tizra, that which is rooted, that which has Hashrasha. And therefore, Asher Tizra, Mishat Zriya. From the moment of planting, the moment of rooting, that's when you have something that'll be Nitar Yedei Omer. And later, Popular Rava, Yochi, Afagav Delohi Shrishnami. Who says that you have to root? Zriya is to plant. It doesn't mean to root. He says, Amarle, Sudne, Rashi here gives two different explanations for it. One is Sudne, Tamidei Chachamim, that you're a great Talmud Chacham, and it's based on Soda Shem L'Reyav. So it's an acronym that picks up on that Soda Shem L'Reyav. Or Lishnach Rina is that Rav Papa was a beer maker. And the nickname for beer makers was Sudne. And so that's what Rava was saying too. His Talmud Rav Papa, I'm like, Sudne, beer maker, Basadek Tiv. V'chaga katsir, bikurei masecha, asher tizra basadek. It says, in the field. Rashi says, Ache niklat v'nishrash basadek. Until it's taken hold in the field. That only happens with rooting. It doesn't take hold in the field until it's actually rooted. Until that point in time, that's what we discussed yesterday. Is it considered to be independent, like you put it into a cod, or is it considered to be batel the karka? But batel the karka doesn't make it a basadeh. Basadeh is only when it becomes unified and one with the sadeh, not when it's nullified to the sadeh. That only happens with rooting. And so that's how we know that rooting is the determining factor, the threshold for the omer to be matir, the grains. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph.